This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. In about 10 days, lots of families will gather around a table for a holiday meal, and you can be sure most of those tables will include some form of delicious drink. Now, if your mind has immediately gone to wine glasses, or we're in the South, maybe sweet tea, stop right there. There is another tasty option that you can serve with all those sweet potatoes and greens and turkey. It's craft beer. John Eisenhower teaches a beer class at Kennesaw State University, and he holds the unofficial title of Beer Professor. I spoke with him last year.
Beer Professor is my nickname. The actual title is I'm Associate Professor of Beverage Management, which is, I think, a political kind of thing because I just teach the beer culture class.
Right. There's not some other beverage like lemonade that you're teaching.
No, it's just beer. You know, and I cover all the facets of it, all the different styles and the history and anthropology and sociology and biochemistry of it. It's a fun thing.
And beer is a complicated issue because, I mean, people tend to think, you know, I go to my store and I see what's there and there's American beer and there's European beer or whatever. But there's actually a huge number of different kinds of just beer itself, like types, not even just the breweries, right? I mean, we're talking about people who brew this particular type of ale. Am I getting this wrong?
No. There's probably 25 major styles of beer, and within those, there's sub-styles. So you might have your stout, and then you'd have regular stout, Irish stout, Russian imperial stout, and so on and on. There's a pale ale. There's, you know, IPAs. And IPAs are the big thing right now.
So right. Okay. So let's talk about IPAs. What's an IPA?
Okay. IPA stands for India Pale Ale. And it's because when the British soldiers were over in India, they would ship the beer over and it would become infected. And hops are known as a preservative. They have antibacterial and preservative qualities. So they increase the amount of hops to ship over to India so it would make it, and that style was popular. And then the Americans glommed onto it, and now there's a million kinds of IPA in almost every grocery store.
So if I'm sitting down and I'm trying to decide what kind of beer I'm going to serve with my holiday meal.
I think you should serve beer with every meal.
Okay. So here I am. I'm sitting down, and I'm cooking for a large different variety of people. And there's going to be somebody there who says, no, thank you, I don't like beer. What's the most unobjectionable beer that's sort of your gateway beer?
Well, I think it depends on what style of beer. I get many people that tell me they don't like beer.
Yeah.
And then I say, that's because you haven't tried one that you like. And with there being everything from fruit-flavored Belgian lambics to, you know, Russian Imperial Stouts.
Is there any particular one that, like an elevator music, is there a one that just kind of appeals to the widest variety of people?
Well, right now, the largest consumed beer in the world is Pilsner style. And that happened probably around the mid-1800s, 1850, 1860.
It's been the most popular since the 1800s?
Yes. There's technology behind that. We used to drink kind of murky beer out of clay. And then what we did is we developed glass technology so you could see it. And then all of a sudden, the Pilsner styles, which are aged, then these were all developed in Bohemia. Like there was actually a Budweiser in Bohemia and Pilsner Urquell. And so the Germans that were migrating to America came and got those styles. Some cases, they took the name of the beer, moved to America, and then started mass production of them. And it's become the behemoth that it is today.
So if I'm drinking Coors Light, I'm drinking a Pilsner.
Yep, you're drinking a Pilsner.
And if I'm drinking Bud Light, I'm drinking a Pilsner.
You're drinking a Pilsner. Now, they're only vaguely close to the original ones because they've evolved over the hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But they still are that style, and that's the most popular.
Okay, so let's go back to our holiday meal. And you said you serve a different beer with each entree?
Each course. And typically, in general, with pairings, you either want to get something that's similar flavored, so they kind of compare nicely,
yeah,
or they are very different so that they complement each other that way.
Okay, well then let's play that game.
Okay.
Let's say I'm starting with a salad, right?
Okay.
A fresh green salad. What beer do I pair with that?
So if you're going to have salad, you're going to have things that have some spicy notes to it. And so that would go well with a Pilsner, possibly a German wheat beer, things like that. You know, the lighter ones.
It's like a Hefeweizen is what we're talking about.
Yeah, a Hefeweizen. Wow, that's a good one. Yeah, a Hefeweizen. The Belgian wit beers would go well with that. The American lighter lagers. There's a few very well made Pilsners in the United States, and I think the lighter ones are perfectly technically correct. They're just lighter than some of the craft palates want.
Yeah, just something a little crisper, I guess, if you're starting with a salad. So okay, we move on from the salad and we get our first course, which is most likely something. Like maybe it's stuffing or potatoes, something heavier and kind of starchy.
Okay. So when you get into the heavier beers, and you want to do it with intensity. So the more intense the flavor of the food, and especially with fat, the more intense you want the flavor of the beer so one doesn't just overwhelm
you. Oh, so if you have just potatoes with butter, that's different than if you have, say, garlic mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I would say if you're going to do a heavy garlic mashed potato, then you'd probably want to cut it with something like an IPA with a lot of hop bitterness into it.
Mm-hmm, but if I'm doing just the butter...
Yeah, then you could back off and do something like a regular American pale ale.
Should I feel snooty about American beer? Every time I speak to somebody from Europe, they disparage American-made beer.
Well, I think that's historically that's been true, but anymore, the last time I was in Belgium, I went to a very famous lambic brewer, and he was wearing an American brewery shirt at the job.
Are you going to tell us which brewery?
It was Cantillon. And he was wearing the Goose Island shirt.
Oh, nice.
So they're changing. And you know, we were disdained because after Prohibition, all the small breweries disappeared. And the big guys that could weather the Prohibition storm were all making fairly similar, they were low flavor, low hop, low malt beers that appeared to the masses. Now, one of the things that about America is we're a lot hotter than a lot of Europe. And so having a Russian Imperial Stout in the middle of an American summer doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so certainly here in Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, so I drink seasonally. So I will drink lighter beers in the summertime and heavier beers in the fall and winter.
And where do you lie on the whole issue of room temperature beer or cold beer?
Okay, so the room temperature or cellar temperature in London is different from cellar temperature in Atlanta. So, and one of the things that I think is important to note is that your ability to taste malty sweetness as the beer gets colder drops out quicker than hop bitterness. So if you take a beer out of an iced cooler that's meant to be drank at 48 degrees, it's going to taste really lopsided. It's going to be very much more bitter. Just like if you took an American Budweiser or something and warmed it up to 48 degrees, it's not going to taste right. And so the beers are made for certain temperatures. And so my theory is if you're going to go with the craft thing and a pairing, let the beers warm up to, you know, at least 45 degrees before you start serving them.
Okay, so let's go back to our dinner.
Okay.
We've just had, say, potatoes, and now we're ready for our main entree. Let's say that I have made turkey, our most common meat protein during a Thanksgiving Day dinner. Let's imagine that this is a relatively not strong flavored food. Then what do I put with it?
So now we're talking about things that are more roasted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the malts that are roasted, malt is what makes beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sprout it and you put it in an oven and you cook it just like you would roast a vegetable. And the darker you roast it, the darker the beer color is.
So, darker, you mean the longer you cook it?
Yes. The longer you cook the grains to make the beer, the darker they get. And
right.
So lightly dried ones would make a good American Pilsner or you know, any kind of light ale. The medium dark makes good Oktoberfest. And then you're getting into the roasted. So it's roasted like a vegetable or a meat dish. And so any malt forward kind of thing, if you're talking about like turkey or ham, the Scottish ales are malt forward.
Like a Guinness?
Yeah. Well, a Scottish ale would be something, Jekyll makes one. Monday Night Brewing makes one called Drafty Kilt. Yeah. And so the Scotch ales are malt forward. Brown ales are malt forward that would pair pretty well. There's Belgian style called double that mm-hmm. would pair pretty well with roasted or even a triple, although I tend to say start with the low alcohol, lighter flavored beers and work your way towards the heavy dessert beers. So you don't want to overwhelm your palate.
Okay. So then we move on to dessert. We've had our meal. We're moving on to dessert. And let's say it's something that's very, very sweet, like a creme brulee. What do we then serve with something which is quite sweet?
That's when I would go into the things that are more roasted that you can get coffee or chocolate notes out of, the porters and the stouts. So I would go with something like Jailhouse Brewing here makes a breakout stout. There's a Creature Comforts Brewing makes a porter called Coco Boone, which is made with lactose, coconut, coffee, vanilla, and chocolate. So that would
good.
Go with the dessert
yeah.
pretty well. Kennesaw's Burnt Hickory has something called a graham cracker stout, which has a pretty noticeable cinnamon effect in the graham cracker flavoring of it. And then Red Hare has something called Sticky Stout, which is more of a classic stout that goes with chocolates and heavier things. Even a double cream ale or a double cream cheese would go well with that. But then your lighter beers with a lot of effervescence would go with that too, because the effervescence washes away the the heaviness of the cheese.
Would it make a difference to you how heavy that dessert is? A creme brulee is quite light, but what if I was serving a cheesecake?
Cheesecake is thick enough to where it would go pretty well. I wouldn't suggest a Russian Imperial Stout with a salad.
Right.
It would just wash it away, and you'd never taste the salad. No, you'd never get the salad. But with something thick like a cheesecake, there's enough fat in it to where something with a lot of coffee and chocolate notes from the malts would wash it away. But that would also could be done with an IPA. So really, if you look at any number of different books, they will just say, here's some general guidelines, and you decide what you want to do. But you have to know some place to start if you're not a beer aficionado.
Right. Not a whole lot of people are. How do you obtain that knowledge? You just have to taste them all?
That's a fun way to start. and in fact, there's whole books on just beer and cheese pairings. And then there's many web resources that talk about guidelines. And now, even if you go into a grocery store, you'll see so many different kinds of beers that you didn't even see 20 years ago. It's really amazing. And breweries are popping up all over Georgia.
So let's go back to the snooty level. How do you feel about flavored beers then? I mean, are you the kind of person that posts angry rants about pumpkin spice beer?
Well, back when I used to be a pub brewer, and the crowd always wanted a pumpkin spice ale. And the problem I had with that, I don't care for nutmeg so much, so that's not my thing.
Yeah.
But the spicy notes get into the draft lines, and the next beer you put on for like 3 days is going to taste like pumpkin spice. So that's really my issue with it. And if somebody wants to come out with a habanero pineapple IPA, that's fine. My concern is that the shelf space, there's only finite shelf space, and there's probably going to be, it's probably going to swell a little bit further, and then it's going to have to collapse back to what's manageable.
So you're just worried about those beers crowding out the better ones?
Well, I tend to favor the classic traditional beers because they've been around for hundreds of years for a reason. And so it may be that it's kind of fun to make, like a pineapple, habanero porter or something. But there's a reason that those styles haven't existed for hundreds of years. Now, they're fun for brewers to make, and if they take off, then we could come up with a whole new style. And Americans are incredibly ingenious about throwing everything but the kitchen sink into a beer. And some of these profiles, I think, work very well. Some of them are fairly constrained in their limited release. It's like, we're going to try this once and see what happens.
So how is Georgia's beer? We do have craft breweries cropping up here. Are we good at it yet?
Yeah, I think so. I'm in the industry, so I'm a little bit biased.
Yeah.
So I believe that there's some excellent beers being made in Georgia, and they're growing everywhere. There's a brewery now in Kennesaw, which I didn't think would happen in my lifetime. And there's breweries in Alpharetta and Woodstock and Savannah, and they're just showing up everywhere. There's several downtown in Atlanta. The Five Seasons Brew Pub, I think, is a really popular one. And in fact, I'm taking my class there, so we're going to do a beer food pairing.
Oh, now I see why people take your class.
Yeah, they have to write it up.
Oh, okay.
And one student just sent me a report that said that was awesome. And it's like, no, I train them to think about what it is they're tasting and smelling. And you have to subtract what you like when you're being an analytical person from, I give them two pages. Say what you like on the back. Tell me what you're perceiving, because I'm training their palates on the front score sheet.
Okay, so let's go back to our hypothetical dinner.
Okay.
We've finished dessert, and we're getting ready to just sit down on the couch or whatever and chat. What would you suggest is a good after-dinner beer?
Okay, the after-dinner beers are when you bring out the big guns.
Right.
So barley wines.
Because they're not competing with any food.
Yeah, that's right.
That makes perfect sense.
And then if there's some snacks, like some salty snacks or something, people are satiated, and you haven't fed them so much alcohol during the meal that their taste buds are blunted. So they can sip on something. And beer as a sipping beverage, when you get out the barley wines or the Russian Imperial Stouts, you shouldn't really be drinking those by the pint anyway. In my opinion, not if you're going to be driving anywhere. And so you just pour out a few ounces, and they have a huge complexity of aromatics. When you get the alcohol level up, alcohol is a flavor enhancer. And then when you get more higher alcohol beers, then you end up getting more products of the yeast can throw off different kinds of aromatics and esters. And so the beer is much more complex. So it's something you sniff and sip rather than, you know, starting, you know, generally the first beers of the evening are consumed a little bit faster. And so that's why you want to start with something a little bit lighter.
And do you drink water while you're also drinking beer?
I alternate. I try and do about the same amount of water as beer, just because it, you know, you can get dehydrated if you're sampling.
Which leads to a hangover the next day.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think, you know, moderating your intake and then taking the time to think about what it is you're consuming is really key.
Now, John, do you cook for the holidays?
Oh, I cook all the time, yes.
Yeah, and you go through this whole process that we're talking about each time in terms of pairing your entrees with your beer?
Well, it depends on who's coming over and what their background is. I know what I like, and basically I don't use water in cooking. I always use some kind of beer I have on hand.
That was Kennesaw State University professor John Eisenhower. He teaches a class on beer, but we are not ready yet to put down our glasses. Just ahead, what exactly makes craft beer special, and why are so many brewers dumping the bottles for the cans? This is On Second Thought.
Take a drink and you'll sink to a state of pure inebriation. You'll be tanked like the whole Irish nation. When you drink enough of my beer, you will find this magic gruel. Make your every joke a jewel. You'll drive drunker than Oksana Bayou. Go on, buds, drink my suds till you've reached that pure inebriation. Though the beer may be free, you're just renting it from me.